Moving on to TCU, it's kind of one of my favorite weeks of the year. You know, we have a lot of guys who want to be NFL players. This is an opportunity. They get a peek of what the NFL lifestyle is. They're out of school. There's nobody else really around. So they basically, it's a football week. It's a great opportunity for us to kind of spend this last week together as a 2019 team. We'll do a lot of team activities and things like that. And we're gonna be intentional about enjoying this. I think we need to finish this on a positive note, send our seniors out here feeling good about what they've done. And again, you know, outside of maybe one or two, I think that they played their best football in their senior year. And I appreciate that group. I talked about them after the game on Saturday. And then this is a great opportunity for us to have a building block moving into our offseason program as well, which is important.
This is the Signal Caller Podcast.
From the X's to the O's to the Jimmies and the Joes.
Your inside look at West Virginia Mountaineer football, the Big 12 Conference, and the college game at large.
Now, coming to you from high atop the majestic mountains of almost heaven,
here's your host,
Jed Drenning.
Welcome to it, folks. Closing out the 2019 regular season with episode number 20 of the Signal Caller Podcast, the TCU Frogs Edition. We'll, of course, look ahead to Gary Patterson's crew as a win is a must for TCU if they hope to advance to a bowl. The Frogs will enter the game at 5-6 after throwing a scare into the Oklahoma Sooners in Norman last week. Meanwhile, West Virginia won't be bowling in 2019. Despite a hard-fought game against another top 25 team last week at Mountaineer Field that saw this young West Virginia squad hold the Cowboys to their lowest point total and yardage output of 2019, the Mountaineers fell short, dropping to 4-7 on the season, the seventh loss almost certainly eliminating bowl possibilities for West Virginia this postseason. As he does each week in what I refer to as his engine of analysis, these press conferences that he holds, let's let Neil Brown walk us through the good and the bad in all three phases of West Virginia's 20-13 loss to the Oklahoma State Cowboys.
So Oklahoma State recap, talk special teams first. Negative is we lost the field position battle. Haven't done that very often this year, but we lost the field position battle really because our kickoff return unit really struggled. We didn't do a very good job blocking them. Missed several assignments on that. Credit Oklahoma State's kickoff team, but our return team did not play very well. Missed the field goal, and then we had several missed tackles on punt and kickoff, some things we haven't done this year. Positive special teams, we had a 41.8 net punt, which is really good. Our punt rush really affected their punter. He had two poor punts, and I thought we put some pressure on the shield that affected that, and our field goal protection was much better. Defensively, overall, a really good performance. The few negatives, we had zero takeaways. It felt like for us to win the game, we needed to get some takeaways. We had several missed tackles, and that's going to happen when you play a player of Chuba Hubbard's caliber. And really, we got fatigued in the fourth quarter. Some of that is because we don't have a whole lot of depth, defensive line and in the secondary, and those guys are, you know, it's kind of a culmination in the week 11 playing a lot of snaps, but we definitely got fatigued in the fourth quarter. The positives defensively, 2.4 yards per carry, 89 total rushing yards. They were the eighth leading rushing team in the country coming into the game. They only had 285 total yards of offense. They were in the top 10 in total offense coming into the game, and we limited the explosive plays. We actually won the explosive play battle, and they were leading the country, entire country, in explosive plays.
Yes, the Mountaineer defense was fatigued in the fourth quarter, throwing a lot of guys out there, and they were facing a lot of snaps. Oklahoma State ran 23 plays in the fourth quarter. In fact, 23 of the 66 they ran in the entire game. The biggest beneficiary of this might have been Chuba Hubbard, the nation's leading rusher, who generated 47 of his 106 yards on the ground in that fourth quarter. All things considered, it was a heck of an effort by the Mountaineer defense against Hubbard and that Oklahoma State offense. The Mountaineers played downhill in attack mode against Chuba and the Cowboys' running game.
And now they bring a motion man through. Here's a handoff. Hubbard, he is hit in the backfield, and he is dropped. Say hello to Sean Mahone.
You, of course, heard Tony on the call there as West Virginia's Sean Mahone managed a tackle for loss against Chuba Hubbard. Mahone, one of several West Virginia defenders, playing their best football here down the stretch late in the year. In West Virginia's last four games, Mahone with 41 tackles, in fact, Mahone is now West Virginia's leading tackler for 2019. But a great effort by the WVU defense against one of the nation's premier playmakers in Chuba Hubbard, a guy that will be playing on Sundays for a long time. Here's a number for you. West Virginia held Chuba Hubbard below his yards per carry average on the season on 20 of his 26 rushing attempts. Oklahoma State leads the country with 19 plays from scrimmage of 50-plus yards, but they had zero plays of 50-plus against West Virginia. And Hubbard, who leads all FBS players with 8 runs of 40-plus yards, had no runs of 40-plus against the Mountaineers. Vic Koenig's defensive game plan managed to control Chuba Hubbard. You're not going to shut him down, but it did force Oklahoma State to get a little creative, finding different ways to get him the football in space. They fed him in the passing game as he ended the day with 7 receptions, despite the fact that he entered the game in Morgantown with just 11 catches on the year. So nobody's really forced Oklahoma State to do some of the things offensively that the Mountaineers forced him to do to survive that game in Morgantown. And it's been a while since somebody bottled up Mike Gundy's offense to the extent that West Virginia did, holding the Cowboys to 20 points, their lowest scoring output of 2019, while also holding Oklahoma State to 285 total yards, their lowest in 18 games, and limiting the Cowboys' ground game to 2.4 yards per rush attempt, their lowest per carry average in a game since early in the 2016 season.
Offensively, you know, the biggest negative, we just didn't maximize our red zone opportunities. And that, at the end of the day, that was the story of the game. Continue to struggle in the run game. That is what it is at this point. We had 3 critical drops, 2 of them on third down and another one that would have been an explosive play for us. Positives, we outgained them. We won the explosive plays.
And here comes a blitz. Deggy drops. Deggy dumps the ball downfield. Has George Campbell. Makes the catch. End zone touchdown. What a throw. What a catch. West Virginia leads for the first time. A 34-yard reception on a perfect feathery floater downfield. Campbell over his shoulder makes the catch, and he took it away from the safety, Jarek Bernard.
What they do is they'll bring that zero. They'll play zero coverage with and they'll bring a lot of guys, and you don't got enough to block them, so you got to have answers.
Just getting out of there and seeing where the ball was, I thought that he had overthrew me. And just being able to adjust and make that catch was very exciting. But I know that it was big for us because we needed a big play.
We had 0 turnovers, and we threw the ball. Our protection, you know, outside the last couple plays was pretty solid. And we threw the ball well and caught it outside of those drops.
The red zone was a problem for the Mountaineer offense. You heard Coach Brown allude to it there. The scoring area in general was problematic for the Mountaineers. West Virginia advanced the football at or inside the Cowboys' 35-yard line 5 different times, but those 5 possessions yielded just 13 points. The closer you get to the red zone, the more the field contracts, and the more West Virginia's struggles in the run game come to the forefront. Combine those struggles with the drops that you heard Neil Brown talk about, all at inopportune times, and that's how a WVU offense that did show the ability to effectively move the football up and down the field ended the game with just those 13 points. The highlight of the day for the Mountaineer offense was that 34-yard touchdown pass in the second quarter that you heard a little bit ago. You heard Jarrett Daigie and George Campbell walking you through how that played out, and there certainly was a lot to like on that play. That concept versus a zero blitz is something I'm pretty familiar with. We had a lot of success with it in a past life when I was at Glenville State, and the Mountaineers executed this thing pretty much to perfection. Against that pressure look, the Mountaineer offensive line swelled up from the inside out, taking away the most immediate threats. Letty Brown, aligned in the shotgun to the right of Daigie, stepped up and neutralized Cowboys safety Malcolm Rodriguez, who was trying to slip through that backside A-gap and was presenting an immediate threat. Against a true zero blitz, you can't stop everything because the whole concept is based on the defense outnumbering you, but what you are going to try and do is mitigate those most immediate threats to your quarterback, giving him as much time as possible to get rid of the football. As far as the quarterback goes, he of course knows the offense is outnumbered, and he therefore in turn knows it's up to him to put you in a play that will enable him to get rid of the football as quickly as possible before that extra blitzer hits home. Now, he recognizes, as Daigie did, that on the back end in the secondary, that means that those defensive backs are isolated in single coverage with no deep help. So if he can just buy enough time for one of those wideouts to make a play, it could be instruments up for your band, but that's the tricky part, buying them enough time, because remember, you have an extra blitzer trying to reach you. A couple interesting things played out on this particular snap. At the last second, Oklahoma State defensive end Trace Ford, after making a pass rush move, dropped off as a spy, putting his head on a swivel, looking for sight adjustments or quick crossing routes that could help Daigie get out of trouble. Now, Daigie, you might have noticed, retreated a little bit extra in the pocket and ended up throwing this football off his back foot. Now, there's a couple reasons you do that. First of all, if there's a free runner coming to hit home, you're going to face the music and you're probably going to take a shot, and it sometimes helped to absorb that shot if you're throwing it off your back foot instead of planted as a stationary target. But because of the terrific job by the WVU O-line and by Liddy Brown on this play, Jarrett Daigie didn't actually end up taking a hit. It came close, but it never actually happened. But retreating and throwing off your back foot has an additional benefit, and maybe a bigger one. It buys your receiver just a bit of extra time, an extra half beat maybe, to help cross the face of that defender and separate against man coverage. Because here's a little secret from a guy who's thrown a ton of these deep cross faces against zero blitzes. The easy part of this play for the quarterback can often actually be the throw itself. The difficult part can sometimes be IDing this and having the courage to stand tall and face the possibility of that big hit. But the throw itself is something you can launch off of your back foot, because what you're going to do is make sure that you put enough air under the football, downfield, in the anticipated target area relative to where the receiver is going to be, giving him plenty of opportunity to adjust to the throw when the ball's in flight. And this is exactly what Jarrett Daigie did. If you go back and watch this play, that football left his hand when George Campbell was around the 25-yard line. This gave George Campbell a space of about 20 yards to find the football in the air and track it as he made that incredible catch crossing the 5-yard line and then reaching the end zone for the score that gave West Virginia that second quarter lead. And so here we go into Thanksgiving weekend, and it's pretty cool that West Virginia will be showcased on a nationally televised Black Friday game, because nothing says Thanksgiving weekend more than the game of football.
This is a turducken right here, where we got, you know what a turducken is? A turducken, this thing here, is a deboned duck stuffed in a deboned chicken stuffed in a deboned turkey. With stuffing, now you're talking.
The Mountaineers will board a plane on Thanksgiving Day to head to Fort Worth, Texas, where they'll square off against Gary Patterson's TCU Horned Frogs at 4:15 on Friday in Amon G. Carter Stadium on the campus of TCU. We're going to take a quick look at those Frogs right after this.
For more West Virginia Mountaineer football content, follow us at The Signal Caller on Twitter.
Hurts throws an interception. It's Vernon Scott. Scott with wheels. Vernon Scott across midfield. He's going to go. A game-changing pick six. 97-yard return.
That was TCU nickelback Vernon Scott with a long-distance pick six that kept the Frogs hanging around in the fourth quarter against Oklahoma last week. And that play wasn't just impactful, but it also tells you a lot about this TCU defense. The interception came on a trips concept by the Oklahoma offense targeting CeeDee Lamb, a package the Sooners have had some success with this year. Gary Patterson, of course, knew that and had the Frogs ready for it down near the goal line. On the snap, CeeDee Lamb exploded toward the flat, but then stopped on a dime and cut back to the inside. But Vernon Scott read this. He was anticipating the route combination. He broke on the throw and boxed Lamb out for the interception, then followed a convoy of blockers up the sidelines all the way to the end zone. It was game planning and execution like this that helped TCU last week hold the Sooners to their lowest passing yardage total of the Lincoln Riley era and hold Jalen Hurts to his lowest passer rating as a starter since Alabama's national championship game against Georgia 2 years ago, the game in which he was famously replaced in the second half by Tua. These are the things that Gary Patterson's defense can do to you. He remains one of the sharpest defensive minds in the game, and he's terrific at taking away what you're good at and forcing you to try and beat him with what you're not. Patterson has been doing this for decades, and he takes tremendous pride in it. 15 years ago, Mike Leach's high-flying Red Raiders of Texas Tech upended TCU 70-35, racking up the most points ever scored against the Patterson defense. 2 years later, in 2006, listen to the passion in Patterson's voice after his Frogs gained redemption by smothering that Texas Tech offense in a 12-3 TCU win. Kind of funny to listen to this knowing that 6 years later, TCU would actually join the Big 12 Conference, but the truth is, it was impressive wins like this one over Texas Tech that helped make that possible for TCU.
I mean, our kids played hard. People have been underselling our kids for years. You know, all we ever want to do is talk about the Big 12. I'm just telling you right now, we're not the Big 12. We're just a Texas team that plays with Texas players. I mean, I got call-in show guys wanting to know how we're going to Thursday night calling in, wondering how we're going to stop Texas Tech's offense. Well, you just saw it. Speed, baby. Now, usually I don't get up here and tell you, but I'm just telling you guys right now. You know, I get tired of being treated like a stepchild in this state and in this town. And my kids do, too. We gave up 70 points 2 years ago, and that's why we got these bracelets on our arms. Said, make it personal. We were waiting for this one for a long time.
So for a coach who has a history, like a lot of the good ones do, of making things personal, what might that mean for West Virginia on Friday? Because here's something else to consider. The worst loss Gary Patterson has suffered as a head coach wasn't that 70-35 beatdown back in 2004 at the hands of Texas Tech. That was a 35-point loss, which was the second worst margin of defeat he's ever found himself on the business end of. The worst loss Gary Patterson has ever suffered as the head coach at TCU was to the Will Grier-led Mountaineers last year in Morgantown by 37 points.
It's 47-10, West Virginia over TCU.
And we knew that TCU was outmanned in this game, especially between the two offenses. And we knew they were beat up on defense, but West Virginia's got to be pretty proud.
47 points put up by the Mountaineers against this vaunted TCU defense.
This year, of course, West Virginia has a different head coach with a different staff and a different quarterback and, by and large, a completely different lineup. But don't think that will stop Gary Patterson from finding creative ways to motivate his football team just as he always has. As Mountaineer head coach Neil Brown explains, TCU is a complete football team that presents challenges in all three phases.
I've got a ton of respect for Gary Patterson and what he's done at TCU. His guys play the game the right way. Tough to play against those guys. They do a great job in all three phases. Their kicker, Song, start with special teams. He's 21-22 on field goals. Been the most consistent kicker in our league the last 2 years. One of the top punt return units in the entire country. They do a great job. I think Chad Glasgow leads that unit, and him and Coach Patterson, they've done a really good job. Year in, year out on the punt return. They've got maybe the most explosive punt returner in the entire country in the Rager kid. He's averaging 18.1 yards per attempt. That's pretty good. Big-time ability. He's taken two to the house, I believe. Maybe one of those got returned or called back, but explosive guy.
And he's got a lot of room. Rager.
Both the running backs are the returners in the kickoff return game. They've done a solid job on that, multiple 35-plus yard returns on the year. And they got really good team speed, and that shows up on their kickoff and their punt teams. They've done a really good job of holding people in check on both of those teams. So quality group all the way around. Defensively, they've got a tradition of playing defense at a high level. If you look at all the defense statistics in the Big 12, they're in the top two in most of those. Two of the top D tackles in the Big 12, they got the 94-90. They're unique in that, from it, similar to us in the way they move their defensive line, but they get pressure from their D tackles similar to us. And those guys are two of the top in the league. They're difficult to block both in the run and the pass game. Linebacker Wallow, he's their leading tackle. He's second in the Big 12. He's always around the ball. You can tell he's a really intelligent player. And then they got experience in the secondary. Four out of their five starters are seniors. The Gladney kid's been playing for a long time. He's got great cover skills. The free safety, who's not a senior, I think he's a sophomore, Mooring, is all over the field. I'm really impressed with him. I think he's super talented.
Gary Patterson's always been a defensive innovator. And the roots of his particular version of the 4-2-5 defense can be traced back to the 1990s. When he was on staff at places like Utah State and New Mexico, tasked with stopping pass-happy attacks like Brigham Young, Utah, New Mexico State. From a personnel standpoint, having five defensive backs on the field arms Patterson with the versatility to adjust to a wide range of formations. But just as important is a defensive alignment that allows for six run stoppers in the box, allowing TCU to maintain numerical integrity at the point of attack against the run game. Now, part of what makes Patterson's scheme unique, He isolates the front from the coverages. They're often not linked together. Sometimes, in fact, he'll make three calls as he divides his defense into three what he calls attack groups. Those include the defensive linemen and the linebackers, that group of six, the second group being one cornerback, the free safety, and the strong safety, and the third group being the weak safety and the other corner. Within this scheme, Patterson will incorporate a lot of the pattern matching that you hear talked about. And in effect, what that is, you start in a zone coverage and you route read what the receivers are doing, whether it's the slot or the wideout, and you react accordingly, sometimes seeing the zone coverage evolve into what amounts to man coverage. Again, all predicated on the movement or the route combinations of the receivers. The strategy is to stop the run, defend the quick game, and take away the combination routes that modern offenses lean on. If TCU can do these three things, it backs an offense into the corner, forcing it to take low percentage shots down the field. In other words, they dare you to throw deep. And that's not always the most ideal plan against coverage concepts that can include up to three safeties and against a defensive play caller that vows to never leave his secondary in a single high safety look. The whole system is based on playing with leverage and with speed, but without personnel capable of rushing the passer and defending pass catchers in space, the strategy would probably fall short, which is precisely why Gary Patterson recruits those types of players.
I think there's less pattern matching in this league than other leagues because you get so much of that variation in the two and three safeties, you know. Teams spot drop out of that. I think what TCU's done probably better than anybody, and I said this on the teleconference, is they take away what you're good at. So whatever your best patterns are, they're going to match those. They're going to try to take those away. Same thing in the run game. They're going to move the front to take away whatever the best things that you do in the run game. And they were definitely one of the first defensive staffs that really worked pattern match and worked these match coverages and things like that. And they've continued to do that. And he's always had one to two really good pass rushers, and they've always been able to cover man-to-man. And this year is no different. Gladney Kiss special. They rotate the other side, but they've done a good job. Offensively, they've ran the ball extremely well this season. Talked about the running backs on the kickoff return, their quality. They got a big, they've kind of got a thunder and lightning combo. It's a good mix. It's worked well for them. I think they've had one of the top offensive lines in our conference. Start four seniors up front, and they played a lot of football there. A couple NFL prospects for sure. And their tight ends, they're starting to get their tight ends more involved as they go through the season. They've got two big, long targets. And then talked about Rager. You know, I think he's got elite speed, elite ability. We're going to have to know where he's at. They do a good job of moving him around.
Heck of a 1-2 punch in that TCU backfield. You have the big guy, 6'3", 240-pound Siwo Alanalua. He's a load, and he likes to run downhill. But the far more dynamic of the two is Darius Anderson. You might remember early last year, this kid gashed Ohio State for 200-plus yards in that game at Jerry World.
Hand off. Anderson has a crease. Darius Anderson has the sidelines. Can they catch him? No, they cannot. 93 yards.
Anderson's a one-cut guy who can plant a toe and go the distance just as he did there against the Buckeyes. TCU will use both these backs behind a variety of zone blocking concepts, but they'll also throw some counter at you. And then there's the shifty Jalen Rager. This kid has wiggle, he's explosive. When they throw the football, he is their primary focus. He's a fast twitch guy who can really hurt you in the open field, and they'll also try and find creative ways to get him involved in the run game. And credit quarterbacks coach Sonny Cumbie, who's found a way to get a lot of production out of a true freshman quarterback from Council Bluffs, Iowa, named Max Duggan. Duggan's an athletic kid who's thrown for nearly 2,000 yards and 15 touchdowns, but down the stretch for TCU, it's been his legs that have been the Frogs' greatest asset. In TCU's last six games, Duggan has averaged 14 carries and 86 rush yards per contest.
Duggan will keep it. Makes a nice move. Duggan across midfield has the first down.
And 12 times this year, Duggan has used his legs on third down to move the chains for TCU. Now, to give you some perspective, that's one more than Jalen Hurts has run for on third down for Oklahoma. There's been a mass exodus at the quarterback position out of TCU this month, with the only other TCU quarterbacks to attempt a pass this season, Alex Delton and Mike Collins, both recently entering the transfer portal. Under ordinary circumstances, I might think that losing both the other experienced guys behind your starter and Max Duggan might impact the way that you approach this game offensively. Maybe you wouldn't be inclined to run Duggan quite so much and put him in harm's way, risking injury with no viable options behind him. But these aren't ordinary circumstances. TCU needs the win against West Virginia to get to number 6 and earn their bowl bid. And either way, following Friday's game, the Frogs will have a significant layoff before the possibility of their next game exists. So expect the Frogs offensively to come out with a no-holds-barred approach, and against a West Virginia team that last year held TCU to negative 7 yards rushing, that approach will of course include running Max Duggan as much as necessary to win the football game. It's time to get in victory formation and take a knee and run the clock out here on episode 20 of the Signal Caller podcast as West Virginia braces for its final game of the 2019 regular season. Couple things that Champ Sedmok, our good buddy in Thomas, West Virginia, will be monitoring. Can the Mountaineers' defense continue to build on 2 strong performances the last couple weeks against Oklahoma State and against Kansas State? This Max Duggan kid is a freshman, and he's shown that if you can apply the appropriate pressure, you can force him into some poor decisions. 6 of his 8 interceptions came in a 2-game span against Oklahoma State and Baylor, and it's probably not a coincidence that in those 2 games, Duggan was sacked a combined 8 times. And on the other side of the football, there'll be plenty to watch as Jarrett Dagey and West Virginia's young but talented receivers cross swords with the master, Gary Patterson, and his leverage-based defense. The key is, if they're deep, you get deeper. If they're wide, you get wider. The trick is doing all of that in the pressure-packed few seconds that you're afforded immediately after the ball has been snapped. Kickoff is set for 4:15 on Friday. It should be a good one. Until then, happy Thanksgiving, and I'll see you at the 50.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of the Signal Caller Podcast with Jed Drenning.
The fun doesn't have to stop here.
Be sure to hit subscribe on your podcatcher now and never miss an episode.
If you have any questions, suggestions, or feedback,
head over right now to Twitter at the Signal Caller and get involved.
Join us again next time.
Until then,
we'll see you at the 50.